As you know, the On Farm podcast is brought to you by the team at Seen and Heard PR and Marketing, and I just wanted to remind you about a new initiative that's happening here called On Record. On Record is a project to preserve voices, stories and memories for the future with your very own audio recording. So we're recording memories of rural life. We're travelling around Scotland, working with families and organisations to capture precious voices of family members or staff members or long-serving office bearers to preserve those for posterity and sometimes for historical value. So if you think this project is something that you'd like to be involved in, and maybe you have a grandparent or a parent that you'd like to capture on audio while you can, please do get in touch. You can find out more at onrecordmemories.co.uk. Hello and welcome to the On Farm podcast. It's Anna here with you this week. Today is part two of a rerun of the two episodes that we recorded with Jim Smith, farmer and comedian. It popped up on my Facebook memories as a recording that we created an unbelievable 4 years ago, right near the beginning of the On Farm podcast. But it's always worth another listen. So grab a cup of tea, put your feet up and enjoy. You want to come home with me? I am patting Floss, probably the most famous dog in Scotland. Jim's beautiful one-year-old border collie. She's just gorgeous.
Oh, I know, she's beautiful. As I say, she's a pet first and foremost. But
that is your intention, to get her trained up.
Yeah, she's very keen. She's mad keen on the sheep. So, yeah, more like my girlfriend's uncle, he trains sheepdogs up in Kinloch Bervie.
Oh.
And I thought about putting her out, but it's a bit like sending her to boot camp, you know.
Yeah,
she might come back like a Vietnam veteran, you know, no fun, you know, just scarred for life. But very good at sheep. If she doesn't make it a sheepdog game, I'm sure she could play for Scotland. There should be a Scotland dogs football team. It's a great first touch there.
So where are we off to now then?
We'll just go up the hill. The yows have just been getting turnips. I get turnips from Stuart's at Toft Hill. Normally they're into cobs by now.
Uh-huh.
But with it being that bloody wet,
it's been awful.
It would just be a waste of time giving them cobs unless you could find a really dry bit of ground. So,
do you want me to get the gate?
No, sure. It's a burrach here, don't you worry. So this is all the yows. They've all been scanned, but they're not split up yet into their lots.
Okay,
they're actually coming in this weekend to get their pre-lambing jags. And they're looking far better today, because even sheep are wet.
Oh,
and
yes.
Especially anything that's a bit thinner, and the longer wool, they just look miserable.
Yeah, they just start to look dejected,
but
don't they?
At least up here in this farm, there's a lot of trees surround the farm.
Oh, it's stunning. So, the views are just amazing.
So that's...
300, almost 360
yep.
degrees.
So you're looking south to Perth, and there's the Tay down there.
Yeah.
That's beautiful flatland down there. A lot of carrots and a lot of carrots growing down there. The basic end of Sidlaws is pretty much Forfar, you're seeing.
Okay, yes.
And then you're seeing away up. That's basically the start of the Grampian Hills, so you're away up. You're only like 30 miles from Glen Shee here.
Gosh, yeah.
To the ski.
Yeah.
So
you done any Munro bagging in your time?
No, I'm actually wanting to start that up, because now I'm 41, and because we've been to Braemar the last few years, and it's just beautiful. And I was wanting to, I feel there's a lot of Scotland I'd like to see, so... not so much maybe Munro bagging, but there's some lovely walks. I want to walk, you can walk from Braemar to... Abbey Moor, it's called the Lara Grew. And
That sounds good. How many miles would that be then?
I think it's like 26 miles or so.
Oh, right,
so it's, you could do it in a day, but there's some bothies you can stay in.
So you're going to have to get one of these backpacks for the baby, aren't you?
Yeah, there's a Tysers in Perth.
There we go, that'll get you sorted.
God, aye. Need another gig to get all the gear out of there. But funny you said that. Would like to do a bit
more
walking.
It's funny because, I'm the same age as you, and as soon as I hit 40, it was like I had to read more books and do more significant stuff. And I don't think I'm ever going to bag all the Munros, but
no.
If I could do 30 or 40 in my life,
absolutely.
Be happy. And So oh, I'm no good at
10
maths,
a year. It's only 1 a month.
Yeah. But then well, it's quite, it's, some of them are quite challenging to do in the winter because you need enough daylight hours to
absolutely.
Get all the way
but
up.
And there's some you can do, you can nick 3 or 4 in
yeah,
a day
like
apparently.
Yeah.
Once you're up that yeah. height, you know.
Yes.
Well, you want to get out, it's maybe a bit windy.
Well, yeah, yeah. Tell us a wee bit about the breeding of these sheep, maybe, if you don't mind.
Yes.
And then...
They're all kind of white-faced sheep. We used to traditionally buy Cheviot ewes from Laird. Mm-hmm. Sometimes still do. They would be crossed with Texels. And then we started a few years ago putting a blue-faced Leicester up to them to get a Cheviot mule, just to get mm-hmm. a more prolific mule. And then putting them back to the Texels. I used to run some Suffolk tups as well, because... Oh, Dad, I like the Suffolk, and uh-huh. it's a good, you get a good weighty lamb, but then, traditionally, I don't really keep Suffolk sheep for breeding, you know, it's usually more white-faced sheep, so,
yeah.
I kind of binned that, I only got one Suffolk, it's mainly all Texels now, and then we get the, we pick the, keep the best sheep lambs back for breeding.
And do you like the sheep over the cattle, or are you kind of...
A bit of both. I like the sheep, the fact that, if you didn't have cattle, you could just about sell your tractor and things and just have a quad bike and a. Mm. I like the sheep that you could basically get away with just having a dog and a stick to an extent, but they're a bloody nightmare too. I mean, they just especially this, a lot of stress on them this time of year. And there's odd casualty. There's always odd one. There's always odd one with a bad foot. And
yeah,
I've got a foot bath now. That's made a big difference, but. The other reason I like the sheep just now because the trade's flying. Luckily, I've kept back some lambs. So I've got finishing lambs in the shed there behind Mum's house where you park the car.
I know, it's made me laugh because we recorded an episode at the NFU Scotland AGM a couple of weeks ago. And it's that old kind of adage, like, you know, farmers are never happy. So we spoke to this farmer. Why are you so grumpy? Because I'm grumpy because the sheep price is so high just now. I was like, why are you grumpy? It's because I already sold mine.
Yeah. Although there always seems to be, no matter how good you think you've got your lambs, there's always somebody comes in and gets a higher price. You think, what's he doing?
Oh, but
but I enjoy. I would actually love to be more arable. As I say, I got my neighbour in to cut my bar last year, but I'm gonna buy a combine because last year, just with the wet weather. He was struggling to get his own cut. Then by the time he got to mine, some of it was buggered.
Yeah, you don't always want to have to rely
on
it.
And any accountant would say, oh no, you can't justify having your own combine, but I'm only needing an old 10-foot or something that can work for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, yeah.
And folk will laugh at this, they think I'm daft, but I really enjoy it. I enjoy physically driving a combine or... I'm no more happier when I'm sitting on a plough on the tractor. Yeah, so yeah. I would love, as much as I love here in the stock, I would love to be have 500 acres of that land down
there.
Lovely, you know,
calming ringtone.
It's so annoying. I can phone my leave a voicemail if it's that desperate.
And I suppose also that is a good opportunity for your mind to churn over when you're driving a plough for several hours and do the diversification job at the same time and get some of that material. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. You'll see me stopping now and again to stop and write a joke, you know.
Yeah. Is that harder then when you're feeding cattle and stuff because you're kind of busier, so your brain's kind of on the job rather than necessarily thinking about jokes?
Feeding cattle you can kind of do with your... You can shut all your brain off a wee bit, you know. So that's what I tend to wonder.
Yeah.
Like, so when I'm ploughing, I'm enjoying it that much because I get Spotify on, I get all my tunes and pretend I'm a teenager again. I just switch off from everything. So.
Yeah.
In fact, we need music. We'll get a radio in the lambing shed. And after my dad died, I got a radio for the shed just to have some, like, Ken Bruce or somebody on, you know, just to have
a
bit of noise,
banter.
You know.
Yeah.
Because it can be quite quiet at times.
Yeah, and you're also, I think, really supportive of RSABI as a farm charity as well.
Yes, I.
Because farming, I guess, you know, you're out and about meeting a lot of people because of your other job, but farming is a pretty lonely occupation if it's your only occupation.
Yeah.
Do you think you would suffer from that if you weren't out and about doing other things?
Ach, I don't know. No, I wouldn't be. No, actually, to be honest, I quite like my own company. Don't tell Morag that, but I do. I'm quite happy on my own at times. See, it suits some farmers quite well, but folk are just different, and folk like going to the market. I mean, you'll see folk go to the market once a week, even if they're not buying or selling, they need to get out. I think that's why farm sales are so popular, because there are not so many of them now. Folk don't go just to buy the machinery, but just to catch up with people, and local shows are important. But yeah, it's a difficult one, that kind of whole. I know there's been a lot of emphasis in the last 5 or 6 years on mental health and farming. Young farmers did the thing like, are you okay, and all that kind of stuff. Are we still the highest industry for suicides and things?
I think and I think there's too much of a perceived stigma, isn't there, about seeking help, and they're trying to break down that barrier and say, you know, if you're physically unwell, you'd go to the doctor and trying to encourage people, if they're feeling as though they've got mental health issues, to go and to speak to somebody, even if it's just, first of all, just like you were saying earlier, get the support of your next door neighbour, and then seek help.
I think there's a difference between being lonely and having company but not being able to talk about it. I think that's the difference, because, I mean, I don't know the figures, and I know it's a bit morbid, but I think there are folk that take their lives, but they haven't been physically lonely. They're working with people that they maybe have family, you know, but they're bottling up. Maybe it is financial pressures, or just they're unwell. And that's the ones you have to watch. Maybe it's the ones you don't notice. I mean, I don't think I make a conscious effort. It's different now because I've got Morag living with me, and I've always been fortunate I had mum on the farm. But I think if I wasn't doing my comedy, I try and go and see St Johnston now and again. It's good for comedy material. And I make an effort. I'm lucky, a lot of my best college pals were from here. So I make an effort to meet up in the pub and watch a Scotland game or something now and again, or go around for tea or whatever. And I'm on the Perth show committee. It's even just something like that. It's like Saturday night, we've got our director's dinner. So I think I would value a lot of these things more. But
absolutely. To socialise and see people and share experiences. Yeah.
The thing about the comedy, it's something completely different, because farmers are, they're only happy, I suppose, when they're meeting other farmers and talking about farming, but the likes of the comedy is something completely different, and I absolutely loved going down to, perform at the Glasgow Stand on a Saturday night, because it'd be packed, and it was an atmosphere, it was just something completely different, you know.
And how do you think the urban audience take to some of the farming comedy?
Fine, I think, because obviously you want to go for the mass market, although without the rural things are very much my roots and the kind of core, and that's why I'm a bit different than your skinny jean comedian. But at the same time, you're wanting to try and track, I would love to be able to entertain loads of folk. I mean, so it's just trying to find a balance that a majority of folk, it's trying to retain that thing about being authentic and using growing up in the rural Scotland as your kind of base. But at the same time, you don't want to be as narrow-minded where you only folk in Perthshire are going to get it. You want to expand. So I would like to think I could entertain any audience. But Glasgow actually has a huge kind of Highlands and Islands, and because traditionally folk would leave the Highlands and Islands and go to Glasgow. But nowadays, you know, the student thing and all the rest of it, because it's so big, so the central belt's so big, so even if you're only appealing to maybe 10% of that crowd, they're going to come and see you. That's still a hell of a folk.
Yeah, oh God, isn't it? Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So what do you think? Obviously, life will change a wee bit in July when you become a dad. But even kind of taking that into account, what do you think your kind of comedy, long-term comedy ambitions are?
We're hopefully going to get a pilot episode of The Farm. That's the thing on iPlayer.
I heard a rumour about that, yes.
So we're just waiting on the BBC giving us the go-ahead. Chris Forbes, who I write it with, we've kind of got a kind of rough pilot script there, ready to go if we get the go-ahead. But the important thing is to keep my farm diaries going out every couple of months, because that keeps you out there. And I should say that, if it hadn't been for that, there's no way I could have done a big tour like last year. Mm-hmm. That's really helped me massively get my stuff out there. So,
yeah.
So keep doing that. Just trying to write a new hour or hour and a half for taking on tour next year. I'd do a big tour of Scotland next year, I think. And just keep, you know, like, I'm very fortunate I'm breaking the news. There's two or three other things coming through. So this whole thing might just be a bit of a fad now, or a fashion. So, you know, 5 years down the line, everyone might want a change, or I might be wanting a change, you know. So I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, it's hard.
You know, let's just have a kick at the ball now and see where we can take it. And if not, I'm not worried, because I don't think I want to be in my mid-50s trying to break through.
Yeah.
You know, I'm only 41 just now. I know it'll be different once Bobby comes along, but it's no different than trying to look after suckler cows and 400 sheep.
Exactly. So, you need every day. Yeah.
And as long as I can just try to write new material and have an appetite and a desire to do it, I'll keep doing it. But the farm will always be behind me.
Yeah, exactly. You know. And I guess with the comedy, if there ever gets a point where you think, oh, do you know what, I'm not really enjoying this anymore, then you can just pull the plug. You know, it's all in your control, isn't it?
Yes, totally. Yeah. I mean, folk ask me why I've not went down south or that yet. I mean, the furthest south I went is Newcastle. It's just maybe the time thing, and I would need to get better organised, and it need to be worthwhile us doing that. But the ultimate step would be to get noticed or something for, like, going on live at Apollo or something like that, you know. But that's a different type. I don't know if I don't think I'm broad enough for that. I don't know, but just now I'm very happy with where we're going, and the tour last year was just phenomenal. So we'll just see what the crack is.
Yeah, no boundaries and no limitations, but also maybe no expectations. You just kind of go with the flow.
Yeah, I mean,
what
I think
you enjoy.
If I was just to focus solely on my comedy, I think I'd get quite down. Well, not down, but I think it would scunner me. It would totally scunner me if that's all I had to do. It was just gig and gig and gig. It's all right if you're selling out to thousands, but I'm quite happy farming, and I know that, and this might sound a bit big-headed, but I'm relatively confident to know that as long as I've got a good show for next year, that I would be able to maybe, you know, do Aberdeen and Inverness and Perth and Edinburgh and places like that. And
it's interesting. I'm Scottish, but I don't sound it, because I grew up in England. But I've noticed... Tell me to shut up if you don't want to answer this. Quite a few times today, you've said, oh, I don't want to sound big-headed, but you're very humble and modest. And I think it's a Scottish trait to be humble, even if you were selling out gigs at, you know, live at the Apollo or whatever, you'd be like, well, yeah, but, yeah, I don't want to, you know, be big-headed. People should be proud
of
their achievements. Yeah, don't be modest.
Arrogant,
I know, they are. And I just find it, everybody, particularly in rural Scotland, is so modest about what they've done. If you'd said what you'd said without the preface of, I don't want to sound big-headed, but...
I think you just don't want folks saying, oh, God.
No.
Who does he think he is?
And they don't, and they probably wouldn't, but everyone always worries about that.
I heard this... I listened to Radio Scotland once, and I think it had been a guy that... I don't know what he'd been good at. I think he was the world Highland Games champion or something. Say he was like the world caber tossing guy or something. But his daily job was, he worked on a builder's site. Right. And he came away with like a gold medal or something, world champion. But he says that was the best thing for bringing them down to earth back in the Monday morning, just, you know, mixing cement.
Exactly. In your case, the animals don't know. They don't know or care how famous you get, do they? You know, even Floss isn't even aware, and they're just still expecting fed and looked after, regardless.
Aye, absolutely.
Regardless of whether you've been on TV the night before or not. Yeah, it's interesting.
Maura gets annoyed because, well, I've been going out for 3 years now, and it's only the last couple of years where things have taken off for me. So folk ask, somebody asked Maura, did you know Jim before he not made it, but before he became successful, I was like, no, I knew him when he was shit. I'm not in love with him for his fame and money. She was really annoyed about that.
Stuck it out, and I'm still
in. And she has. Yeah. She is actually, because you've got to start somewhere. And more like, bless her, she'd come down to pick her off of the train for the lesson on Friday night, take her to some bloody gig somewhere.
Oh right.
I was gonna be getting 50 quid for some men's club somewhere or that, and she stuck with me.
Yeah, like, she knew she was a keeper. She was like dedicated. Yeah, to the cause. Yeah.
You know, so. It was nice to finally repair a bit, you know.
Yeah.
Buy her a patio. A French door.
I don't remember what year it was, but I remember a friend and I came into Edinburgh and watched you during the Fringe at the Stand. And Morag was featuring in your set. And we came away. And I said to my friend, I was like, do you think Morag's real?
Yeah, well, especially with that name. Morag from Inverness.
She was like, yeah, I definitely think she's real. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I was like, I think maybe it's because exactly that. I was like, you couldn't pick the name and her she's from better if you tried.
Not real, but no, she's definitely real.
What do all your family members think about it?
Great. Because like Carly and Claire are quite go-ahead people and they've got their own businesses. So I was kind of lagging behind a bit, so...
they've both got their different diversifications, and now yours is even more unique than that.
Delighted, aye, really delighted for us. Yeah. And I'm very proud of them, actually. They've done well and they're both respective things. So we're great, and we're quite a close family, actually. I'll speak to them once a week or that, or have a blether, you know. So even though Claire lives up at Fraserburgh, you know, we'll keep in touch and... No, they're great, and not one point, even when I was starting off in the early days, or especially Mum, you know, maybe if there was, I don't know, enough going on here, not one point did they ever say, actually, what you doing, you know, is it a bit daft?
Yeah, they supported right from the beginning.
I think maybe if I was constantly dying on my arse.
Somebody somewhere would have told you if that was happening.
Yeah, well, the audience just wouldn't have laughed. Exactly. You wouldn't have got booked again. But
yeah.
I've just been very fortunate.
It reminds me a wee bit of Miranda, you know, obviously Miranda.
Oh, yeah.
Because she's got her, like, her on-screen mum. Yeah. And then quite often she's on TV with her real mum. And I was thinking, when I was seeing, you know, watching you, I thought, oh, I wonder how Jim's mum feels about the on-screen mum, whose name I can't remember.
Annie Louise Ross.
She's the granny from Katie Moore.
Yes, that's everyone remembers me. She's lovely.
Is she good?
She's lovely
woman. Has your mum met her?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because they filmed the farm up here.
I thought.
So it's great. I don't have to go anywhere. So she's just from Dundee.
Oh, is she?
She totally gets. That was important.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want a Glasgow person trying to put on an accent. We wanted somebody that knew about how they talk up here. And so being from Dundee, she knows about going to the berries and all that kind of stuff. And she's just great. And she just looks... She just looks the part.
She does.
You know these old farmers' mothers that are as hard as nails, you know. It's like, I don't know if you remember the before farming life, about 10 years ago, there was a thing called the farm. I think it was just called the farm, actually, and it was a documentary. It was like farming life.
Yes, and I was a bit involved with that because I was working for the NFU at the time, we worked with them to find the farmers. Yeah, so I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
And I think there's one old mother, I think she's driving the JCB for the guys up clearing gutters and on, and then she's in making the porridge and just this kind of old hardy.
Yeah.
You know, and they were all probably brought up milking cows, you know, with no heat. Houses with no central heating.
Oh, gosh, they would have had a hard life.
I mean, we don't know how lucky we've got it. I know we moan about farming, but like my granddad's generation, we'd come out in the morning like this and cut neeps, you know, cut neeps for cattle and things like that, and physically bending down in cold weather and chucking them into,
and no quad bike to go around and check stock.
I mean, I know there was always plenty, and you know, labour was cheap and all the rest of it, but God, it was a pretty tough shift, I think,
Yeah.
I mean, even things like stooking corn, you know, go out in the blazing sunshine and, be all right if you were on the the reaper, you know, behind the horse. Yeah, that's the fun job. Yeah. But then you've got the folk having to stook the sheaves and the stalks.
Your hands and your arms will be torn to shreds.
And then what happens if it pisses with rain or the technology is funny because I always when they first put out the first combine harvesters, they must have thought it was amazing. You know, this machine that can cut and thresh. Some of the early combine harvesters, they didn't have a grain tank on it to fill in a bogey. It was a bagger unit. They would fill these like 200 weight sacks of wheat on the combine and then just drop it off on the field. So then another guy had to come along and lift it off the ground, and all before the rain came.
Yes.
You know, like, what? You know, it's just like, we're bloody lucky, you know.
Oh, yeah. In so many ways.
Yeah.
And do you even just like, even just take Twitter as an example? You know, people are farmers are sharing so much knowledge and information and stats and support, even just through that one example of a social media platform. So if you add all them together, people are so lucky in terms of what they can learn and share with each other just through technology.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, even before you've got, you know, the GPS and the tractor and this, that and the other and all your...
Yeah, you know, no, definitely. It's funny what you're saying about Twitter. Yeah, because I follow a lot of farmers on Twitter, and some of them are brilliant and good at finding their corner and sharing the technical information too. But you can get sucked into it too. And I try and put a funny tweet out now and again. But if you're to sit and scroll, I can see how folk get bogged down and so embroiled in it.
Yeah.
It's that kind of like sticks and stones thing.
Yeah.
You don't take it. You know, folk get, and you see these threads, the debate threads. Like, I just stay away from all that. And, you know.
And it's the same with the Instagram generation, isn't it? Like, you know, people are portraying these perfect lives that have, you know, because it's taken them a week to set up one photo to make everything look like it's ideal. But today, it genuinely is sunny and blue sky.
No, it's the first day. I think Sunday was a good day. It's the first day the sheep have just been sitting, lying content.
Happy, yeah. And that must be a good feeling for you.
Yeah. So they're looking quite well, actually. Before this kind of wet, it's only since January it's been really wet. The back end wasn't too bad. They were looking, there was plenty of grass. They're looking well, but now that we'll get them started on the feeding now, and they'll get their jags. And it's the next 6 weeks is crucial for them, really. So
it's kind of onwards and upwards now, and when the weather's like this, you start to feel optimism, don't you?
But that's what I said earlier about March. You can get a couple of days like this, and you know, folk get ploughing, and all of a sudden the ground dries out, and it can turn, and you can maybe get some fert on the grass and things. I love this time of year from now on. I love it. We're like a couple of men.
I know. I'm sure you'll be enjoying this episode because Jim's a really fascinating and interesting guy, but. Please also go back and have a listen to some of our previous episodes. We've got an interview with Doddy Weir. Jim Smith actually is a passionate supporter of RET, the Royal Highland Education Trust, and they were the subject of our very first podcast. So you go right back to episode one, you can learn about how they're educating children throughout Scotland about food, farming and the countryside. And we've also got episodes with SAOS and the National Farmers Union Scotland and a host of others. So go back and listen to our previous episodes. Well, I really appreciate your time, Jim.
Oh, no worries, aye.
Thank you. I think people are going to hear the real story behind. Hi. You are just so lovely, aren't you? You are just so lovely. Yes, you are.
Foss has already been... I mean, she's only what... We've only had a year, actually. And she's been in two episodes of the Farm and I Player. And she had a cameo role in the Blairgowrie pantomime.
Famous dog in Scotland.
Yeah, she knows it. You know.
She might be getting a big. If you're not, she might be getting a big head.
Oh, she's just a darling.
Everybody knows me. Look at me. Oh, yeah. She does have, in the nicest possible way, she does have a bit of a diva.
Yeah.
A diva look, doesn't she?
Because we've been trying for a dog for years now, you know.
Thank you again for listening to this episode of the On Farm Podcast. It's been great to have you with us, as always. We're on Twitter if you want to get in touch. That's @on_farm_UK. Also, the first half of our chat with Jim Smith was last week, so do go back and listen to that if you haven't already. And thanks again for joining us.